This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iran reiterates its seriousness about reaching a good and strong agreement to revive the 2015 deal and urges the U.S. to avoid ambiguous literature in the text of a potential deal. Queen Elizabeth, Britain's longest reigning monarch, dies at the age of 96 after 70 years on the throne. Her eldest son Charles succeeds as the country's king. And the U.S. approves another massive weapons supply to Ukraine worth over $675 million. Washington plans even more arms deliveries amid the war with Russia. Hello, everybody, and a very warm welcome to the World News. Our top story, Iran says it is still serious about reaching a good and strong agreement should the American side avoid using ambiguous literature in the text to revive the 2015 deal. Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian made the remarks during a phone call with his Chinese counterpart. He emphasized it as a condition to reach a stable agreement in the shortest time possible. Elsewhere in his remarks, Amir Abdollahian exchanged views on bilateral, regional, and international issues with the top Chinese diplomat. Wang Yi, for his part, stressed Beijing's interest in further expansion of ties with Tehran. He highlighted Iran's reasonable request, that is, in JCPOA talks rejecting unilateralism in international arena. Two ministers also discussed issues on lifting Western sanctions. Queen Elizabeth II, who reigned for more than 70 years as a British monarch, has died at the age of 96, with her son Charles now succeeding her as king. In a statement, the Buckingham Palace has announced 10 days of mourning. It says king and queen consort will remain at the royal house in Balmoral, Scotland, before returning to London on Friday. National flags at Windsor Castle and other government buildings have been lowered to half-mast after the Queen's death was officially announced Thursday afternoon. Officials, including newly appointed Prime Minister Liz Truss, mourn the passing of the monarch.
We are all devastated by the news that we have just heard from Balmoral. The death of Her Majesty the Queen is a huge shock to the nation and to the world. Queen Elizabeth II was the rock on which modern Britain was built.
Truss said the Queen had been a personal inspiration to her and many Britons, adding that Britain grew and flourished under her reign. World leaders have also paid tribute to the Queen and expressed condolences to the British royal family over her demise. Elizabeth was the longest-serving monarch in British history. Her reign began back in February of 1952. Journalist and political commentator Saeed Mohsen Abbas joined us earlier to tell us more about the challenges the new British monarch will face after ascending the throne.
Charles is really getting on in age, and you don't know me, this family has quite an age longevity, of course, as we know, but how long will his reign last? Will he be able to make that kind of impact? He's also, don't forget, now presiding over a very different kind of Britain that's emerging. What with all of the energy crisis and the world in flux as we see it around the globe today, Britain is also going to have to find its own way with the Brexit scenarios, with the relationships with China, America, etc., to balance the war in Ukraine. He's coming into a world which is probably equally fraught. I mean, the Queen herself came at the tail end of the Second World War, of course, and he's also going to have to deal with a complete change in the type of society that we're living in, the information age and the biotechnological age, the age of transhumanism, the age of, if you like, all sorts of modern technological advances will have its own challenges.
Calls are growing in former colonies in the Caribbean to remove the British monarch as their head of state. Now that after the ascension of Charles to the UK's throne, after the death of his mother, Queen Elizabeth II, some Commonwealth leaders have expressed unease about the passage of leadership from Elizabeth to Charles. Now, there are doubts over the role a distant monarch should play in the 21st century. In Jamaica and the Bahamas, people are calling for reparations and an apology for slavery. This while Barbados, one of a dozen Caribbean nations which are Commonwealth members, ditched the Queen as head of state last year. Jamaica has signaled it may follow suit. A survey shows 56% of Jamaicans favor removing the British monarch as head of state. Activists in the region also argue that Charles' ascension is an opportunity to redouble calls for slavery reparations. A disturbing trend of violent anti-Muslim attacks has rocked the English city of Leicester over the past few months as locals claim radicalized Hindus are roaming the streets on a weekly basis, hunting down vulnerable Muslims and assaulting them. Leicester, which boasts a sizable Asian community, has witnessed a number of assaults with Muslims falling victim to such incidents. Robert Carter headed to Leicester to investigate, that is, these claims.
A shroud of terror has descended onto the streets of Leicester, with Muslim residents of the English town living in fear for their very safety. Racism, cricket hooliganism, and violent street assaults, all targeting Muslims of mostly Pakistani origin, has become commonplace in this once peaceful city. Amid the hate crime spike, Press TV was informed by concerned locals that the attacks appear to be conducted by Hindu thugs radicalized by foreign extremism. At this stage, we cannot verify the political affiliations of the perpetrators. However, speaking to local Muslim residents, they've expressed major concerns that what might be inspiring this latest round of attacks could be Hindutva supremacism from India. The rise of anti-Muslim violence taking place over there could have a ripple effect affecting the Indian diaspora community, particularly here in the UK, which boasts a sizable British Indian community. Hindutva has become a significant ideology inside India, seeking to establish Hindu hegemony over the country. Many of its advocates preach intolerance towards rival religious groups, especially Muslims, who've become a prime target of India's Hindu extremist rhetoric. Local activists informed us that they believe it's the same Hindutva hate which has caused the rise in Islamophobia here in Britain.
The Muslims and the Hindus in Leicester have been getting along for decades. We've not had no issues. It's these latest crowds of these young Hindutva ideology thugs, RSS, the BJP thugs. This mentality, they come with this mentality, they're trying to bring it down here, and they're very, very racist, and they're the ones who are causing the problems in the community.
This year, at least three severe attacks have occurred, with at least two victims being hospitalized. The media has so far only focused on a recent outpouring of anger by local Muslims, venting their frustrations via scuffles with the police on Monday night. But if the alleged problem of Hindu radicalism isn't dealt with soon, Muslim vigilantism may become the go-to option for some furious locals. Robert Carter, Leicester.
Now the U.S. has pledged another massive military package for Ukraine amid the ongoing war with Russia.
And yesterday, the president approved the latest tranche of U.S. assistance to Ukraine, valued up to $675 million.
The package will include more ammunition, Humvee trucks, and anti-tank systems. Announcement was made during a meeting of defense ministers at the Ramstein Air Base in Germany. The U.S. has also unveiled nearly $2.7 billion in new military support for Ukraine and those neighbors Washington says are under threat from Russia. The Foreign Military Financing Program involves offering loans or grants to other countries to buy U.S.-made weapons. A State Department official says half of the new package will go to Ukraine and the rest to 18 other nations, including Moldova and Georgia, as well as several Baltic states. North Korea has passed a new law which officially declares the country a nuclear weapon state. Now, according to state media, the new law outlines the country's nuclear policies. It'll rule out any negotiations over Pyongyang's denuclearization. Also, the country will not distribute or share nuclear arms with other countries or transfer nuclear technology or materials. The Korean leader has described the new status as irreversible. The nuclear weapon states, or the NWS, are the five states, including the U.S. and Britain, which are officially recognized as possessing nuclear weapons by the NPT. Pyongyang's legislation comes amid signs the country has completed preparations to conduct its first nuclear test since 2017. The death toll from flash floods in Pakistan continue to rise as the death toll continues to rise as people struggle to cope with the devastating impacts of this natural disaster. Authorities have reported 12 deaths in the past day. This brings the total number of fatalities to 1,355, which includes nearly 500 children. People in some parts of the country are building barriers against rising floodwaters that have engulfed nearly a third of Pakistan after weeks of rain. Flooding has disrupted the lives of nearly 33 million people and is estimated to have caused losses of about $10 million. Hundreds of thousands have been forced from their homes as well. The World Health Organization says more than 6 million people need humanitarian assistance in flood-stricken areas. UN has also called for $160 million in immediate aid. Now back to one of our top stories, where North Korea has passed legislation which officially declares the country a nuclear weapons state. Now to find out more about this new law, we're joined out of Seoul by Jennifer Chang. Hello, Jennifer. Hope you're safe and doing well out there. Tell us, what does this legislation really mean? And is it just basically what's already been prescribed now on paper in form of law? Or does it really change anything when it comes to the policy on the country's nuclear situation?
Well, it does change things because previously in the Constitution, the nuclear weapons had been enshrined, the development of them by North Korea. But this adds to that by describing the circumstances under which the North can use these nuclear weapons, namely when it is under the threat of an attack or invasion, or there is a possibility of an attack with weapons of mass destruction or an attack on its strategic assets. So this means that South Korea and the U.S. have to be extremely careful. Now they are conducting military drills again for the first time since 2018 when U.S. President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un held their first historic summit. Of course, those negotiations fell apart in 2019 at their second summit in Hanoi. But since then, there have been no military drills in the field, but that happened this year for the first time since that summit between the U.S. and the North in Singapore in 2018. So this means that the North can actually strike such a military drill, for instance, if it believes that the military drill is more than just a military exercise and is about to attack a North Korean nuclear facility, for instance, or a missile testing site. An invasion is sometimes more likely to happen during a war game because there are so many soldiers and members of the military, servicemen, at the site of the military drill. And of course, these involve tens of thousands of troops at times. At times, they have involved hundreds of thousands of troops. So the North is warning the U.S. and the South not to get too aggressive in their military maneuvers and their calculations of whatever kind against Pyongyang, because now the North is going to respond with nuclear weapons. And of course, South Korea does not have nuclear weapons. and it is reliant on a nuclear umbrella from the U.S., and it is depending on an ally, which may not be there forever.
Right, and Jennifer, and it also seems like with all the stipulations and when we could use it, what we could allow to do with it, what we're not, it's almost like the North wants to get some kind of relevance in its nuclear program. It's like pushing this legislation to say we want to be a recognized, respected, and relevant nuclear power state. If you have nuclear weapons, you handful of other countries, and you're not considered a pariah, why should we be?
Exactly, because the U.S. and South Korea are insisting that the North give up nuclear weapons before any relief of sanctions by the U.S. and by the U.S.-led United Nations and any unilateral sanctions by the U.S. and South Korea can be lifted. And the North is saying that this is hypocritical. Why do we have to negotiate by giving up our nuclear weapons when other nuclear weapons states do not have to do this? We should also be recognized as an official nuclear weapons state. And more pressure is building on the U.S. and South Korea to do just that, to negotiate with the North on its own terms.
Right. And Jennifer, it's funny because we saw a very, I don't want to say docile, but a very watered down and mellow North Korea for quite some time, didn't we? I mean, after the fire and fury remark from Donald Trump and the activity and the kind of rise in tensions, and then there was the meeting and the second meeting. Seems like things got watered down. We didn't see military exercises for a few years. And now with the new leadership in the South and a renewed, like you just alluded to, another round of new military exercises between the U.S. and South Korea, we are seeing this legislation. This is almost a sign of the times that we're back on the tensions path again instead of the de-escalation of tensions path.
Yes, because half or so of the population of South Korea voted for the new president, and the other half voted for his liberal opponent, Jim Yong, who is now the leader of the opposition party, Democratic Party, and they are putting so much pressure on this conservative president. They have sued the conservative president's wife. There is a huge tension going on there between the progressives and the conservatives here in this country. It's extremely polarized. And so this current president, who knows how long he can hold on to power, until the end of his term, perhaps. But after that, we have to see what happens.
All right, good stuff. Jennifer, always a pleasure to check in with you, and do stay safe. Jennifer Chang, everyone, joining us from Seoul. Now, Sunday marks the 21st anniversary of the September 11 terrorist attacks in the U.S., deadliest terrorist attack on American soil ever. Now, following that tragedy, U.S. attacked Afghanistan under the pretext the Taliban supported al-Qaeda. But after 20 years, the Taliban are now back in power in the country, reeling from multiple crises. And that's it for your latest, everyone. Thank you for joining us here on World News.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight. with International Monetary Fund estimating that the total global fossil fuel subsidies amounted to nearly $6 trillion in 2020, efforts to fight the climate crisis seems to be undermined. In this regard, we have taken a look at the world media for further details. Stay with us, please. The website of Common Dreams wrote, an analysis published recently found that government subsidies bolstering the production and consumption of coal, oil, and gas nearly doubled in 2021, even as climate scientists warned that fossil fuel development must be rapidly cut off if the international community is to have any hope of stopping runaway planetary warming. Data compiled by the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, OECD, and the International Energy Agency, IEA, shows that 51 governments around the world, including the United States, Germany, Canada, China, Russia, and Saudi Arabia, provided a combined $697.2 billion in tax breaks and other handouts to the fossil fuel industry last year, up from $362.4 billion in 2020. The International Monetary Fund has estimated that total global fossil fuel subsidies amounted to nearly $6 trillion in 2020. The insanity continues. Climate scientist Bill McGuire tweeted in response to the new figures. The OECD and IEA said that fossil fuel subsidies, which have continued despite nations' vows to start reining them in amid climbing carbon emissions and devastating extreme weather, are undercutting global efforts to fight the climate crisis. Fossil fuel subsidies are a roadblock to a more sustainable future, said IEA Executive Director Fatih Birol, who noted that the doubling of fossil fuel subsidies last year was at least in part attributable to government attempts to blunt the impact of soaring energy costs on consumers. As The Guardian pointed out recently, that approach largely benefits wealthier households as they use the most energy rather than targeting those on low incomes. Research has shown that the richest 10% of the global population consumes around 20 times as much energy as the poorest 10%. Oil companies, meanwhile, are raking in huge profits as they exploit Russia-Ukraine conflict to push massive costs onto consumers. Russia-Ukraine conflict has caused sharp increases in energy prices and undermined every security. Significant increases in fossil fuel subsidies encourage wasteful consumption, though, while not necessarily reaching low-income households, OECD Secretary General Matthias Cormann said in a statement. We need to adopt measures which protect consumers from the extreme impacts of shifting market and geopolitical forces in a way that helps keep us on track to carbon neutrality as well as energy security and affordability. According to Guardian, the fresh subsidy data was released days ahead of a U.S. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration (NOAA) report showing that global sea levels and ocean heat content reached record highs in 2021, an indicator that the climate crisis is accelerating as governments prop up the oil and gas industry. NOAA Administrator Rick Spinard said in a statement recently, the data presented in this report are clear. We continue to see more compelling scientific evidence that climate change has global impacts and shows no sign of slowing. With many communities hit with 1,000-year floods, exceptional drought, and historic heat this year, it shows that the climate crisis is not a future threat but something we must address today as we work to build a climate-ready nation and world that is resilient to climate-driven extremes. Also, the website of the Nation of Change wrote, despite growing awareness of the climate crisis, fossil fuel subsidies actually rose significantly in 2021, increasing by almost half. The reason, say the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, OECD, and the International Energy Agency, is that governments of major economies scrambled to help their residents in the wake of soaring energy costs. Fossil fuel subsidies are a roadblock to a more sustainable future, but the difficulty that governments face in removing them is underscored at times of high and volatile fuel prices. A surge in investment in clean energy technologies and infrastructure is the only lasting solution to today's global energy crisis and the best way to reduce the exposure of consumers to high fuel costs. IEA Executive Director Fatih Birol said in a statement. The new analysis from OECD and IEA looked at 51 major economies, including the OECD and G20 countries, as well as 33 other countries that both produce and consume a significant amount of energy. The analysis covered approximately 85% of the world's total energy supply. In these countries, fossil fuel subsidies rose from $362.4 billion in 2020 to $697.2 billion in 2021. The subsidies are expected to rise even further in 2022 because energy prices and consumption are both rising too.
Food for thought.
Hello, dear friends. And how about listening to another bezel of wisdom from Imam Musa Kazem, peace be upon him, the seventh Imam of the household of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. The light of the body is in the eyes. If the sight is luminous, the whole body will be bright. The light of the spirit is in the brain. If a person is really intelligent, he will acknowledge his Lord. If he acknowledges his Lord, he will clearly see his religion. If he ignores the affairs of his Lord, he will be having no religion. Like the body that does not live without a living soul, the religion does not live without true conviction. True conviction is proven only through the mind.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, avoiding excessive harshness and bad language in the Islamic lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the third condition of calling for good and forbidding evil in the Islamic lifestyle, and that is avoiding excessive harshness and bad language when you're performing such an obligation. In the Islamic lifestyle, it is said, in the Islamic teachings, it is said that a person, when he wants to call people towards good, he must call them with a nice tone. He must call them with love. And when he wants to stop them from performing evil, in stopping them, he must avoid excessive harshness and bad language. Why? Because Imam Hassan alayhi salam has said that al-ifratu fil malamati yashubbu niran al-lajaja, that when someone excessively blames someone or he wants to stop someone from performing bad deed, when he use a harsh, excessive harsh wordings, it raises the fire of not listening. It raises the fire of not listening to the parents or that person. So we must avoid the bad language, use of bad language. And this is not good. It is not according to the Islamic teachings. And a Muslim must avoid a bad language. It must avoid the excessive harshness, the harshness that would result into something else, that would result into the disputes, that will result into ignoring such a person and listening to such a person. Therefore, it is necessary to take care of all these things, inshallah. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of avoiding the excessive harshness and the bad language in the Islamic lifestyle. And this is the third condition of calling for good and avoiding evil. Therefore, we must avoid all these things. Why? Because in the narrations we have that it is said that وَلَا تُكْثِرِ الْإِطَابَ فَإِنَّهُ يُورِثُ الْضَغِينَ, that you must stop and you must not exceed in blaming someone, because when we blame someone and if we exceed in blaming, this will result in the fight, this will result in making enemies, this will result that the person who we are blaming will not have any love or respect towards us. It will remove the respect of two ways. Therefore, when we want to perform the obligation of calling for good and forbidding evil, we must pay attention that we are respecting people, we are dealing with people with respect, we are talking to them nicely, we are trying to explain what they are doing, and we must bring the logic and the reasons for why we are stopping them and why they should stop from performing such an evil act and why they should perform the good deeds. But on the other hand, if we see there is someone who is not listening to us, who never has a respect for himself, then do not waste your time over there. Because after giving the logic and the reasons and everything, even after that, if someone is not listening, then obviously there is no need, because Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam has said, "Man hanat alayhi nafsahu," whoever thinks that his self has no value, "Fala tarju khayrahu," then there is no hope of reform in him. Why? Because he has degraded himself and therefore there is no hope. Therefore, leave him on his own, but do not disrespect, do not use the bad language or harsh words for such person. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
A wide range of cutting-edge digital technology is grabbing the limelight at the 2022 China International Fair for Trade in Services, which is underway in Beijing. The exhibition is featuring a wide range of products, including artificial intelligence, virtual reality, metaverse, and 5G. Visitors can be seen taking virtual reality driving lessons and enjoying scenarios, including different road and weather conditions, wearing VR kits. It's the leading and largest comprehensive fair for trade and services in China. This year, an increasing number of traditional service companies are speeding up their transformations, resorting to smart technologies. The event has set up 9 thematic exhibitions, including cultural and tourism services, education and sports services, hygiene and health services, engineering, consulting, and environmental services. Foam is fun to play with, particularly for kids, but when it's mixed with art, it also becomes a grown-up matter. And that's what a German artist has done, creating a sea of rainbow-colored foam as an interactive art piece and allowing the audience to enjoy themselves and become part of the art. Colors mixed were by Stephanie Luning were turned into rainbow-hued foam cascading down the stairs. The performance was called Island of Foam, version 18. Excited children jumped in as soon as the bubbly sea reached the base of the stairs, delighted to be playing in the rainbow playground. The art piece is made up of largely of water and a food coloring. The artist says she loves working in public spaces and reaching a broad audience of all ages.
Because I like to be surprised by the result myself, and I like to work with this that you never know how it's going to turn out. You have the wind, the weather conditions, the locations, the audience. You never know how the people are going to respond and how the artwork turns out. And that's really what I like a lot, and also how to reach a broad audience.
However, Stephanie says there's tons of work behind all the fun, and cleaning up the mess can be hard. Interactive art is a form of art that achieves its purpose by involving the audience. The immersive art piece is part of the Greenwich and Docklands International Festival, an annual festival of performing arts and outdoor theatre.
Tehran Saray Gallery takes part in a massive art exhibition in South Korea, bringing Iran's leading and emerging artist to the Asian market. Works from 6 Iranian painters are displayed at the event, where hundreds of galleries account for more than $50 million in sales annually. Frank Smith reports from Seoul.
Seoul's annual global art exhibition has been reinvigorated this year with additional events and a most certain boost in attendance. The Korea International Art Fair continues an evolution that began with its launch back in 2002. This year features 164 galleries and more international exhibitors than ever before. That growing cosmopolitan experience and this region's growth as an art market hub is what brought a premier Iranian gallery to Seoul.
When we started this gallery, we had the big goal to just introduce Middle Eastern artists and Iranian artists to all over the world. So when you want to introduce artists, you cannot forget South Korea and Far East as well.
Sarai had participated in last year's art fair with paintings purchased by local Korean collectors. Expanding on that success at the event and as Iranian artists are growing in international stature, Hassan Saradipour decided to display works from six Iranian artists at this year's event.
Our gallery focuses on the established and emerging artists. This artist, Abbas Nasashamlu, he just want to show that how the nature and how the human can affect to each other, how this experience he can bring it on the canvas, on the paper.
The massive exhibition featured paintings, although there were various multimedia and sculpture installations. As South Korean living standards have risen, more people have time and money to spend on such events. Their taste in art has also become more sophisticated.
South Korea used to lack art galleries compared to other countries. There was a serious lack of love for this level of culture. However, now these events, I think, create opportunities for more people to gain such appreciation.
For the first time this year, Freeze Art Fair in Seoul exhibited works from 110 galleries, including Picasso, other 20th century masters, and contemporary talents. Frank Smith, Seoul.
An Iranian movie wins the grand prize for the best film in this year's Moscow International Film Festival. In its international debut, No Prior Appointment won the Best Film and the Best Actress awards. The movie is a product of Farabi Cinema Foundation and directed by Behruz Shoaibi in Iran in 2021. It is the story of a girl named Yasaman who returns to Iran from Germany after her father's death. A short stay in her father's hometown and meeting those who know him leads her to a new understanding of humans and the concept of death. The 44th edition of the Moscow International Film Festival was held this year from September 4 to 11.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields, like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Animals, no matter pets or wild, are more vulnerable to drowning or dying in resulting floods and mudslides. A veterinarian school in Pakistan is offering free treatment for animals injured in the recent devastating floods. The veterinary surgery department of Sindh Agriculture University has set up a makeshift animal hospital as flooding hit humans and animals alike in the surrounding area. Volunteers have been providing anything from surgery to medicine and even ultrasounds to the animals free of cost. People from flood-affected areas can be seen bringing their farm animals such as goats, donkeys, buffaloes, and cows to the center. The worst floods in history have killed an estimated 800,000 farm animals. But there were many heartwarming videos trolling on social media showing people come to rescue animals being stuck hopelessly.
Yeah.
Iran is famous for its hand-knotted carpets and ancient art, which have been loved for centuries and are never going out of style despite changing tastes and increased competition from Asia. Striking geometric shapes that recall 20th century abstract art are what we expect to see in handmade Iranian rugs. But weavers and exporters have been forced to redesign a tradition dating back more than 2,000 years due to numerous problems. Carpet exporter Ahad Azimzadeh says, however, that a revolution is underway. Iranian rugs are known for dense, curving floral designs in rich colors. They were put on display in a recent exhibition that featured a rug with small squares of hypnotic diagonal blue and white lines, and another depicting diamond and other patterns in gold silk. Some countries have overtaken Iran in the global market, but many say modern carpets will never replace the traditional ones, which are deep-rooted in Iranian culture. These days, computer technology is impacting every aspect of our life, providing a greater ability to place things, events, and people within context. An Iraqi museum has started using the technology and virtual reality headsets to make exhibits interactive and to bring scenes back to life. Visitors can explore heritage sites destroyed by terrorist groups. Now using thousands of photographs, a group of local engineers have given a virtual rebirth to five historic sites in Mosul and the broader Nineveh province. That includes a mosque and its leaning minaret. But this museum brings sites back to life for the people who live in Mosul. Although large parts of the old city remain oceans of debris, authorities are trying to restore historic sites, mosques and churches in Mosul. A private museum along the Tigris River, which opened in mid-June, saw more than 4,000 visitors in its first month. The floating cinema of unknown waters is back in the Italian city of Venice, and spectators are getting buoyant to reach the annual Open Sea Film Festival. On board a rowing boat, a motorboat, gondolas, and whatever capable of floating, spectators sail to the shallows behind the Giudecca Island for this one-of-a-kind cinematic experience. The audience can watch the program from their own boat or a barge with chairs for those without floating transportation. The event consists of a series of screenings, performances and presentations on a floating platform and is held for 12 nights in the Venetian Lagoon.
A new bird species has been discovered on the southernmost islands of the Americas. Biologists are baffled.
Discovering new bird species is very, very difficult and rare because the world has been more focused on observing birds. Therefore, this means the discovery site is unique in the sub-Antarctic zone, on which Chile has important sovereignty. This raises the importance of caring for the environment and unique ecosystems, as these sites will allow us to carry out research on climate change, new species and behaviors.
The tiny bird weighs only 16 grams and has a large beak with black and yellow streaks along its body. Researchers say the animal is a subcategory of a species typically found in the Patagonia forest and inhabits tree trunks. But the newly discovered cousin has surprised scientists as it learned to burrow and live in a harsh tundra climate with bitter temperatures. The Diego Ramirez archipelago, where the bird was found, is an isolated bit of land. It also lacks mammalian predators and woody plants. Biologists and researchers from Chilean universities and various academic centers studied the birds for 6 years before announcing the new species. The next moonshot is finally getting closer. NASA says it's ready to test its next-generation rocket ship on an epic launch set for August 29th as part of its mission to send people to the moon.
This new deep space exploration system is going to take us back to the moon and to new science discoveries that we can't even imagine yet. NASA is about to make history with this first flight of the Artemis program.
The mega rocket combines the Space Launch System, or SLS, and the Ariane crew capsule it will carry to space. The rocket is due to blast off for a test drive from the U.S. base Kennedy Space Center, sending an empty crew capsule around the moon and back to the Earth. The Artemis 1 test flight is planned to take 6 weeks. It's meant to rigorously stress the systems to determine whether the vehicle is ready to safely carry astronauts. The program aims to establish a long-term lunar colony as a stepping stone to the even more ambitious future voyages that will send people to Mars. The SLS represents the biggest new vertical launch system NASA has built since those flown in the 1960s and 70s. This story will tell you about what could be the bright side of climate change, and that's the discovery of dinosaur tracks dating back to 113 million years ago. The tracks were found in the U.S. state of Texas, where drought has dried up parts of Paluxy River. Experts say the tracks belong to a two-legged dinosaur with small arms and weighing 7 tons. They say dinosaurs made the prints as they roamed muddy areas over 100 million years ago. The prints were then covered over with sediment due to a flood. And after that, they turned into limestone, protecting the prints. The experts say the tracks have not been seen either before or in decades.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight. The escape of the Malaysian defense contractor at the center of the U.S. Navy's biggest corruption scandal is as stunning and brazen as the case itself. About a dozen U.S. law enforcement agencies are currently searching for Leonard Glenn Francis, known as Fat Leonard, but officials have acknowledged that he may well have fled to Mexico, and he could be on his way back to Asia. Please stay with us for more. This is how Britain's Guardian newspaper covered the story. The U.S. Marshals Service and other law enforcement agencies are facing questions over their competence after the central figure in the biggest scandal in U.S. naval history was able not only to escape house arrest, but also rented vans to load up his possessions. When marshals arrived at Leonard Francis's home in San Diego, California, on Sunday, 4th of September, they found he had cut off his GPS ankle bracelet and fled, 2 weeks before his sentencing hearing. The whereabouts of the Malaysian contractor's 3 sons, who had been living with him, was unclear. Alerts were put out at ports, airports, and the nearby southern border with Mexico, but law enforcement officials conceded that Francis may already have escaped the country. The Regional Fugitive Task Force and the Naval Criminal Investigative Service were both reported to be helping with the manhunt. After being arrested in 2013 in a San Diego hotel room as part of a federal sting operation, Francis pleaded guilty over a vast corruption scheme in which U.S. naval officers were plied with food and drink, expensive gifts, and in return made sure U.S. naval vessels as big as aircraft carriers were diverted towards his Singapore-based company, Glen Defense Marine Asia, for servicing. The affair in which the U.S. Navy was overcharged by an estimated $35 million is known as the Fat Leonard Scandal, a reference to Francis's body size. The San Diego office of the U.S. Marshals Service put up a wanted notice on Twitter on Tuesday. The San Diego Fugitive Task Force is searching for Leonard Francis, a.k.a. Fat Leonard. Francis, who was on home confinement and being monitored by the U.S. pretrial services, cut off his GPS bracelet and left his home, the notice said. Francis's lawyer, Devin Burstein, declined to comment. Francis had been a cooperating witness for federal prosecutors in their cases against senior U.S. naval officers. His own sentencing hearing had been repeatedly postponed, but was due to take place on 22nd of September. Francis's house arrest arrangements were highly unusual after he was released from prison in 2018 to undergo cancer treatment. He was being watched by a private security company paid for by Francis himself, which on a previous occasion was found to have left the house unsecured when a guard went for lunch. In the days before his disappearance, neighbors had seen U-Haul rental trucks coming and going to Francis's home, according to the supervisory deputy U.S. Marshal Omar Castillo. He was planning this out, that's for sure, Castillo told the San Diego Union-Tribune. In December of 2020, a judge in the Federal District Court in San Diego ordered a review of the security arrangement at Francis's house after a court officer made a routine check and found no security guard there for more than 2 hours. The security guard said later that he had gone for lunch. ABC News has also covered the story and gives us more details about the history of the case and what has happened. 3 weeks before he faced sentencing, the Malaysian defense contractor at the center of one of the biggest bribery investigations in U.S. military history made an escape as stunning and brazen as the case itself. U-Haul trucks were seen at his home in a Tony San Diego neighborhood before Leonard Glenn Francis, known as Fat Leonard, snipped off his ankle monitor and disappeared. Nearly a dozen U.S. law enforcement agencies was searching for Francis.